Hey, it's the Week 9 NFL Preview featuring the Chiefs and Bills and more on the Shots and Tenier NFL Podcast from FTN Fantasy for Thursday, October 30th, 2025, the second spookiest day of the year.
Behind April 1st? Wait.
Behind
the second spookiest. Oh, wait. Oh, no. Spookiest. I thought you said goofiest. Well, this is it Mischief Night or Devil's Night where you're at?
I don't know what it is. Nobody comes down my street.
You didn't go out and toilet paper the neighborhood and stuff like that when you were young?
No, I really didn't. I don't know. Maybe California was more chill when I was under 13.
I guess, do the leaves even turn there?
Yeah. No, the leaves don't turn in California, no.
You can't have Halloween if the leaves don't turn.
We're here. That's Mike Tenier. You know him from his Substack, The Two Deep Zone, at miketenier.substack.com. I am Aaron Schatz. You know me as the DVOA guy from FTN Fantasy. And we are here to take your questions and comments and preview Week 9 in the NFL. We're going to get to Broncos, Texans, Colts, Steelers, and, of course, Chiefs, Bills. But first, we want to tell you that we are sponsored by our friends at Underdog. If your fantasy team is decimated by injuries, Underdog is a great way to get back into the game. Make picks using everything you learn from us on the show, sweat the games, and then cash when your picks hit. New customers can play $5 and win up to 100 in get up to 100 in bonus funds or entries when they use the promo code FTN to sign up. Terms apply, and as always, please play responsibly. Michael Allen Brewer wants to know if I'm talking about California where they took ET out to trick or treat. Yeah, but we didn't do, like, toilet papering and stuff. We just went trick-or-treating. We just got candy. That was all.
That's true. Elliot and his friends didn't take E.T. out doing mischief, although that whole dissection thing was pretty mischievous, but I don't think that had anything to do with Mischief Night.
Let's talk about this week. We're not going to talk much about tonight between the Ravens and Dolphins. The fact is that it's mostly about seeing whether Lamar Jackson is healthy. If Lamar Jackson is healthy, then I think we're all under the assumption that the Ravens are back to being a good team. They've got a run of an easy schedule. They're going to make a run at the division title. If Jackson is not healthy, then that offense is not enough to keep up with the problems on the defense, and the Ravens season is over.
And according to John Harbaugh, Jackson has been a full participant in practice all week, and his nose did not grow at any time while telling us that.
Yeah, so I think we all feel pretty good about the Ravens tonight, and the only question is whether Mike McDaniels gets fired during the mini bye. And I was saying to Mike before we came on the air, at this point, I feel like there's no point in doing it during the season. Just wait until the season is over.
Well, it's never about there being a point.
Well, that's true. but I mean, they had a big win last week. So now the vibes are slightly better. Let's talk about the most important game of the week for the playoff odds, and that is a 1 o'clock game on Sunday between the 6-2 Broncos and the 3-4 Texans. Broncos, who are eighth in DVOA, make the playoffs 93% of the time with a win, 74% with a loss. The Texans, who are actually slightly higher, they are seventh in DVOA, make the playoffs 44% of the time with a win and 18% of the time with a loss. I went and looked. The Texans' offense is actually 19th, the Texans' offense. And without the Ravens game, it would still be 24th. They have played the fifth hardest schedule of opposing defenses so far this year, while the Broncos' offense has played the easiest schedule of opposing defenses so far.
Really? Yep. That's surprising.
Yeah, so there's a big difference between the defenses that these two offenses have faced, and therefore DVOA has their offenses much closer together. It also has their defenses very close together, except one of them will be playing without Patrick Surtain.
That's a big deal. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ball for the Texans, Nico Collins and Christian Kirk return to practice this week. It looks like they will both be back. They were missing last week against the 49ers. The Texans offense beat the 49ers with the Iowa State wide receiving core out there running around making plays.
Yeah, Stroud has been good, actually, on short passes this year, but he's one of the league's worst quarterbacks in deep passes. The only quarterbacks with less value on deep passes this year have played for either Cleveland or Cincinnati or both.
Joe Flacco, give him a break.
Part of that is Nico Collins missing games. So Nico Collins coming back is, I think, a the really nice thing for the Houston offense.
This is two of the best pass rushes in the NFL.
Oh, absolutely. It's actually kind of surprising. The Texans are not as high in the pass rush win rate, I think, as I expected, but they're number one against the pass by DVOA. They're number one against short passes. They're number one against deep passes. They're top eight in all three directions. They're top 11 against all five receiver types. Like, the Houston defense is really good, and the Denver defense likes to play man. And now Patrick Surtain is out, and it's, Stroud has actually been better against man than zone this year. And now there's no Surtain, and Riley Moss will have another five pass interference penalty.
They follow him around like it's Roscoe B. Goldtrain following people through Hazard County so they can go play at the Boar's Nest later on in the show.
Obviously a big part of this is whether the Broncos pass rush just completely overwhelms that Texans offensive line, because we talk about Nico Collins coming back, but if the offensive line can't block, Stroud can't get the ball to him,
right? And that's a Texans offensive line that has gone from ridiculously terrible to mediocre. Not good. It's an offensive line that can still get overwhelmed when facing a better opponent. So that's something to look for. Broncos' offensive line has been pretty strong, but as you say,
very strong. The Broncos are number one in pass block win rate.
But you said it's against this easy schedule of opponents, which I guess I lost track of that. Obviously, Cowboys' defense, that's pretty easy. Bengals' defense, that's pretty easy. Titans' defense, I can see it now. You've got these like 31st and 32nd by it with a bullet ranked defenses that they face.
You played the Colts. The Colts have an average defense, right? Okay. What's making the Colts great is their offense, not their defense. Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, they've played some pretty bad defenses and some average defenses. And this is going to be a pretty good defense. And, Nix hasn't felt anything like this. Bo Nix is actually fourth in DVOA under pressure. Wow. But I don't know if he's felt pressure like this.
Right. Right. What do you like?
Well, the line is Texans minus 1.5. And I think what I like the most is actually over 39.5.
Yes. Yes. Now you're talking go over. Chaos over. Sacks and turnovers.
No Surtain over.
Yes. Field position wackiness where you're getting short touchdowns, which is kind of what the Texans have benefited a lot from this year. Go over that. If it's under 40, go over it with these two teams.
But otherwise, these teams are about equal. Mm-hmm. Home field advantage these days is about 1.5 points, and the Texans are favored by 1.5 points. So Vegas clearly think these teams are about equal. So I don't really like it. I don't really like the line at all, actually. Right. I think this is a very good, interesting, very evenly matched game with major playoff implications.
Yeah, and if Surtain were here, I'd favor the Broncos. Or if Collins were unavailable, I'd favor the Broncos. But that tilt puts me, and the Riley Moss flag situation puts me in the mind to lean towards the Texans. But you're right. Take the over, maybe not play the result.
The next game to talk about is the 7-1 Colts at the 4-3 Steelers. Now, the Colts basically make the playoffs no matter what, but this game is very important for whether they get the one seed, right? Like, what's really important for the Colts now is the one seed.
Right.
Because if we all believe that they're not quite as good as their amazing DVOA this year, which I think we all believe this, they're going to come down at least a little bit from this, right?
Right.
What's really important is having that home field advantage and not having to face the possibility of being upset in the first round by skipping the first round.
Correct.
And the Colts get the one seed 63% of the time if they win.
Holy
cow. 34% of the time if they lose. Every win and loss in the AFC is of huge importance to the Colts at this point because they have that two-game lead on the Chiefs and 1.5 on the Bills.
Yes.
But if we think they're going to lose to the Chiefs in a few weeks, they need to keep ahead of the Chiefs. They can't have a one-game lead. They need to have a game lead on the Chiefs. So this game is very important for them. The Steelers, meanwhile, make the playoffs 64% of the time with a win and 38% of the time on the loss.
There's a couple of games on the schedule that are like the battle between the team that I don't really think is for real and the team that I really, 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 really don't think is for real. And this is one of them where the Colts, I think, have a little bit of helium And the Steelers, I think, are kind of like ready to just like trip and fall. The moment like everything collapses, it's going to collapse.
I mean, I think you're talking about the Steelers offense. We have the Steelers defense 22nd, and I think that's about where they are, which is worse than people expected going into the season. I will say we thought, you know, the DVOA projections thought this defense was going to regress, and it has. Darius Slay is looking a little old.
A little.
And the linebackers aren't playing great, even though there's pass rush. And their offense is 12th.
That's stunning. That's what's
which is surprising. But, you know, listen, I mean, getting out the ball quickly, lots of yards after the catch. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. The yards after the catch is actually a really big deal in the other way, because think about all the yards after the catch that the Packers were getting against the Steelers defense. Daniel Jones leads the NFL in DYAR on short passes by a significant amount. So the Colts, if you liked Tucker Kraft, you're going to love Tyler Warren.
You're going to love Tyler Warren. Steelers have the second most missed tackles on defense in the NFL behind only the Bengals, and they played one fewer game than the Bengals. That's not a list you want to be on. When I look at the Colts and their yak, I see first – it's getting schemed up to so many different guys. And then there's a bunch of guys on there. I say, well, I understand that this is the yak machine. Taylor's going to be a yak machine. Warren's going to be a yak machine. Some of the other guys who work underneath there. When I look at the Steelers yak, it's like this, everything has to be broken tackles and like schemed perfectly up with screens and blocking. Cause I don't see, I mean, yeah, Freiermuth's okay, by the way, he's hurt. Metcalf isn't usually a yak guy. The number two wide receiver is barely there. Third receiver doesn't exist. These other tight ends are like,
There's been more short stuff to Metcalf than the Seahawks used to run.
Much more. And he's been doing well on it. But, like, if that's your thing where your deep threat guy is catching your yak, that's kind of like a zero-sum game to a degree.
Now, here's an interesting split. The Colts defense, even cycling through injuries on defense and Xavier Howard retiring, number one against wide receiver ones and 28th against wide receiver two. It has to be something schematic about doubling wide receiver ones. Wide receiver ones have 33 yards a game against the Colts. Wide receiver twos have 80.
I have a question.
Yes.
Calvin Ridley, the wide receiver one in a lot of these samples, and is he dropping 18 passes?
In only one game, right? They played the Titans the only one game with Ridley healthy.
That's right. Ridley was out.
Okay. But some of it was that Davante Adams did almost nothing against them, while Puka Nacua went freaking crazy with Xavier Howard, so bad that Xavier Howard was like, I don't want to play football anymore. the reason I bring this up is because I wonder, will they double DK Metcalf, and will this be a game where Rodgers has to find the other guys? And the other guys are not great. It's really, I mean, the tight ends, right? But for each set, Freiermuth is hurt. And then it's like Roman Wilson and Calvin Austin and...
Right. They're using multiple tight ends kind of on purpose and extra linemen, in part because Roman Wilson and the others aren't great, in part because there's a max protect mentality there for Aaron Rodgers. Freiermuth did not practice on Wednesday, popped up with a quad injury. He took a big hit. I think many people saw that big hit against the Packers. I'm not sure if he stayed in the game or not, but that has sort of been re-aggravated. Also for the Steelers offense, Isaac Ciamolo and Zach Frazier, center and guard, did not practice. They seem more worried about Ciamolo. Deshaun Elliott, safety, took a big hit. He is out. They ran and got Kyle Duggar from the Patriots.
Yep.
But as you said, Slay has looked old. Juan Thornhill has looked kind of like, well, this is not the guy he was 3 or 4 years ago. Patrick Queen has not looked like the guy he was 2 or 3 years ago. So losing a guy like Elliott's a big deal in that defense.
They still bring the pass pressure. Steelers are second in pass rush win rate, and the Colts are only 23rd in pass block win rate. But Daniel Jones is the only quarterback in the league with a positive DVOA under pressure this year.
Wow.
I will say that does seem like a stat that is going to regress. It's very rare that anybody has a positive DVOA under pressure. And if you look at the rest of Daniel Jones's career, it really doesn't make sense. And I definitely believe they help him schematically to do that. But if you're looking for where the Colts are going to take a step back on offense over the second half of the season, Daniel Jones under pressure seems like the most...
I agree. And remember, this is a quarterback who's been playing with the lead in front of the sticks for much of the season. And the best way to eliminate pass pressure isn't always blocking. It's just like, you know, we're up by two scores and it's second and three. You can't really blitz.
And I think he's going to be in that situation again. I like Colts minus three. I think we're going to see the Colts get a test, right? They play the Chiefs in a few weeks. It's really, that would be really setting up for the wake-up call. But I don't think this is the wake-up call. I like Colts minus three, even in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, there is this weird, this is the game Mike Tomlin finds ways to win mentality out there, but I don't see anything on paper to support that. So I'm going to go with the Colts.
And I'm close let's talk about the Falcons, 3-4 at the Patriots, 6-2. Another 1 o'clock game. Falcons make the playoffs 28% of the time when they win and 11% when they lose. Patriots are up to 89% if they win, 71% if they lose. Michael Allen Brewer says road and outdoor Penix. Yuck.
Penix and Penix, yuck.
We've talked about this in general, which is I think that the whole road-home split thing for Penix is very small sample size. There's a little bit of an element of indoor-outdoor, which would be the case with every quarterback who's indoor-outdoor. And I think, yeah, I've said this a lot. Over time, in general, home field advantage stays stable for basically everybody. Mm-hmm. That the only thing that you have for home field advantage is one, home field advantage. Which, you know, and two, that there's more offense indoors, that I think that it's basically the same for everybody other than those two things. And I don't think Penix is particularly awful in the outdoor. It's going to be like 50 degrees here. You know, it's not like horrifyingly cold.
Yes, there's no weather in these games that we're talking about this week. Everything you say is true. And you got to go back and look at how few Penix games you have right now where you're looking at a one or two game really good sample. At home, and some of that might have been the Giants game last year. Is that what we're still looking at? I forget if that was Hoda Rome. By the way, Penix limited in practice yesterday, but he said, quote, after today, I feel like I'm trending in the right direction. I felt like he was soft benched last week.
Interesting. I don't know why they would do that, honestly.
He had practiced for most of the week. Then late, they said he wasn't coming in. And Cousins was terrible, so like that's the end of that.
But although he's partly terrible because no Drake London. Is Drake London on the injured list this week?
He is limited, and it sounds like he is trending to come back as well. Obviously, a huge deal for that offense.
Yes. The interesting looking at the Patriots offense. The Patriots offense is third passing and 31st rushing.
Wow.
Which is interesting because the Falcons defense is actually weaker against the run than the pass. We keep having maybe this is the week the Patriots get their running game back, right? We keep talking about that, and we'll talk about that again this week. Like, oh, maybe that's the week they get the running game back. Drake May leads the league in value on deep passes, and the Falcons are second against deep passes behind only Houston.
Interesting. That was
so that is strength against strength. But the other thing I noted, the Falcons are allowing 9.6 yards a scramble.
Oh, gosh.
Fifth in the NFL, and Drake May likes to scramble.
Yep. You talked about the Patriots running game, by the way. Ramondre Stevenson's popped up with a toe injury. I think he dropped something on it. In terms of the Falcons defense, they are blitzing 40.2% of the time.
Yep. And Drake May is second in DVOA against the blitz.
Yeah. They're not getting home. Yeah. They're not getting home. I mean, they're better than they usually are. They have 16 sacks, 17th in pressure rate. But if you're going to blitz Drake May and not get there, he will scramble away from you, get positive yardage, or if they pick it up, go deep on you.
I'll admit that I forgot about not betting on the Falcons. And in the Yahoo Picks article I do, I bet on Falcons plus 6.5.
Really?
And what's the reason? Then that line moved. It moved all the way to 4.5. And now it is 5.5. Patriots by 5.5.
Is this Penix injury report moving? Or did you move the line? Did you move it?
No, I don't think I moved the line. But I think it's people realizing the Patriots are, because of the schedule they've played, the Patriots are not as good as people think. Listen, the Patriots are 17th right now in DVOA. Mm-hmm. The Falcons are 21st. It's not that big a gap because the Patriots would be 10th or something like 10th without the opponent adjustments. The schedule they have played is so ridiculously absurd, right? I've talked about it. If you look at the average DVOA of their opponents so far, it would be the easiest schedule ever.
Right.
For the full season, it's like the third or fourth easiest schedule ever, and we'll see what happens with the Ravens because they play them in a few weeks. But if you look at just what they've played so far, it's so easy. Listen, I love my guys, and it's wonderful to see my team playing awesome and being 6-2. I love it.
Right.
But let's be realistic about who they've played. This is a harder team than most of the team they've played, and it's not a good team, but it's still harder than most of the teams they've played.
There's enthusiasm of what the Patriots are accomplishing, and then there's this like value added on top of it where like you kind of run away with it. If this were a normal team and we sanded the Falcons' name off of it and said that this was the situation, I might look for an upset here. But this is the Falcons we're talking about. The Falcons. So they will – facing the Patriots. So they will find a way to F this up royally.
On the road, yeah.
And I learned my lesson about betting anything Falcons associated last week by trying to take that over. So I am not mentioning this game whatsoever. You do you. Let's see.
But we feel – so we both feel now – like I was feeling like the Falcons that the Falcons could be the wake-up call for the Patriots, that they've beaten a bunch of tomato cans. But then when you look at all the strength against strengths for Drake May, where he's strong in all the places the Falcons are strong, now I'm feeling more like the Patriots are going to – like more likely to pull this off.
That's a more nuanced way of looking at it. But just don't play the game. Don't play it.
Yeah. No. All right, let's talk about the big one. Let's talk about the big ones. Chiefs and Bills.
Yeah.
5-3 Chiefs, 5-2 Bills, 4 p.m. in Buffalo. Chiefs, playoffs, 95% with a win, 82% with a loss. Make the Super Bowl, 29% with a win and 18% with a loss. Bills, playoffs, 97 versus 85. Make the Super Bowl, 21% with a win, 13% with a loss. Chiefs currently fifth in DVOA. Bills are ninth.
Chiefs have been going up and up and up and up that list week by week.
Yeah, I mean, it's really part of it is the below average special teams is keeping them down a little bit, but they're second on offense. They're ninth on defense. If you incorporate preseason projections, they're second behind Detroit and Dave. Like, I mean, we all feel like the Chiefs are, you know, I mean, I'm higher on the Colts than the market is, but it's not because I'm lower on the Chiefs, really. I'm just higher on the Colts.
Right, right. I hear you. And, of course, as most people know, Bills won the last three regular season meetings, but these teams often meet in the postseason, and the Chiefs won the last three. Only one of the last six games were decided by more than 6 points. I believe that was last year's regular season Bills victory. The overall point differential of the last six contests between these teams is Bills plus four. That's how close this has been when you factor out the meaningfulness of some games versus the other.
The difference is Josh Allen is not playing like an MVP candidate this year. The Bills are first rushing and only 10th passing. Mm-hmm. And Allen has only been 29th out of 36 quarterbacks under pressure this year.
Wow.
And 19th against the blitz. And the Chiefs are 8th in pressure rate. And you may have heard about this thing where they blitz a lot.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. And, yeah, when you watch Allen under pressure or the Bills behind the sticks or in the eight ball, they do suddenly seem like they're having, like, a little mini fit. Like, one of the things that worked very well against the Panthers is after a couple of early fits and starts where Allen was running around throwing the ball out of bounds in the first quarter. It's like, why don't we try handing off and making the other quarterback fumble and see how that works. And it worked very fine. But if the Bills have to get out of that game, the lack of a number one or even like a number two A wide receivers does start to become a little apparent.
Joanna, by the way, asks, how does Caleb Williams have positive DYAR while being ranked 23rd? I'm guessing she's talking about under pressure. The reason why is because DYAR is not over average. It's over replacement level.
Right.
So roughly 2/3 to 3/4 of players will be positive because that's where replacement level is.
Yeah, yeah. And it's different when you're saying, well, who's below average? Calb's below average, but better than Dylan Gabriel or whatever. And then you have Josh Allen being held to a higher standard.
Yeah. There are other things is the Bills are about average in man zone splits.
Okay.
But they're number one in yards allowed per attempt against zone. Where Mahomes has been much better this year. So that is a strength against strength. On the other hand, you want to play zone against Mahomes to keep him from scrambling. Yep. And the Bills are allowing 9.3 yards per scramble. And Mahomes, you know, we all know the talk that he's had a few failed scrambles this year that have only gone for 2 or 3 yards. But, right. you know, the talk, you know, he's always slightly faster than whoever's chasing him.
A little faster than whoever's chasing him and knows when your backs are all turned. He sees that. Yes. A couple of quick notes, by the way. Isaiah Pacheco is out. It's like you're going to see Kareem Hunt and Breshad Smith. Josh Simmons has been dealing with a personal issue at left tackle. He's out for another week. Jalen Moore, if you remember him, he was signed at great expense in the offseason. He has been playing very well at left tackle in place of Josh Simmons. Keep an eye on the Bills, especially those of you who do prop wagers or have a kicker in your fantasy lineup. Matt Prater was limited in practice. He's a very old kicker. And there is no backup kicker because he is the backup kicker to Tyler Bass. So keep an eye on what the Bills are doing at kicker in the next couple of days.
It's interesting because the Bills defense is very good against like running backs as receivers. They're poor against wide receiver one and wide receiver two. It doesn't seem like a really good. The problems they're having in their secondary this year and the second safety play is not like a good recipe against the Chiefs this year.
Yeah, I'm ready to challenge Jordan Poyer in a 40-yard dash. And
he's playing. Taylor Rapp is hurt. I mean,
Rapp is hurt, right. So Poyer's been out there. He came out of retirement to do this. Him versus Kelsey, I think that's an advantage Kelsey, although it'll definitely be like the skeleton bowl.
The line is Chiefs minus -2. I think I like the Chiefs.
What's the system say?
The system says no pick.
See, I'm one of those wagerers, you figured it out by now, where if it's some corny game, I want to put a lot of action on it. And then if it's a game like this, I just want to watch it. I don't need to like add other action because I want to see what Allen and Mahomes do next and learn from it. That's kind of what I think of this game. No pick is no pick, but you like the Chiefs.
I do. I think I like the Chiefs. I think that the way that the matchups kind of come out and the scrambling and the just the difficulty the Bills have had with their secondary this year just favors the Chiefs are really hot right now and they're just playing really, really well. And I think, I mean, it's not, I won't be shocked. Like it's a huge upset if the Bills pull it off, but I do think, and I think if the Bills pull it off, nobody's going to be like, oh, the Chiefs are in trouble again, right. like they were in the first 2 weeks of the season. I think everybody will understand these are two really good teams, but I just think it's more likely that the Chiefs do it.
And the history writes itself with the Bills winning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, all right, now October. Well, right. November. It'll be November by Sunday.
It will be November.
Let's talk about the 8 p.m. game. That is the 5-2 Seahawks at the 3-5 Commanders. Mm-hmm. Seahawks make the playoffs 94% of the time with a win, 79% with a loss. Commanders 24% of the time with a win and 7% of the time with a loss. The Seahawks are a little interesting. I've been trying to figure out how to write this up. I've been looking at why does DVOA like the Seahawks a lot more than EPA does?
Okay.
EPA models have the Seahawks, if you combine offense and defense, something like 8th or 9th.
Okay.
Whereas DVOA has them 2nd. Some of it is special teams. A little bit of it is opponent adjustments. Mm-hmm. There's some really intricate little things in there, like I might be giving too much credit for touchdowns compared to EPA. It's kind of really complicated. But I'm looking at it as a way to figure out, depending on what happens with the Seahawks this year, like ways to improve the system for the future. You know, where is EPA more predictive versus where is DVOA more predictive? So there's some just getting into the weeds that I thought the podcast people might appreciate.
It is interesting. And, you know, to be high in special teams this of all seasons, the season of the million-yard field goal and the new kickoff rules, it's hard to tell what's going to be predictive and what
it's interesting. These are the top two special teams units, but they're not particularly good on field goals.
Right, right.
They're both really good in everything else. Kickoffs, kick returns, punts, punt returns.
Yeah, I would go out on a limb and say, like, kickoff return and coverage for the rest of this year, there's going to be some predictive value to it because you've figured out how this works.
Yeah, like the Rams and the Panthers.
Right, right. We have the kickoff specialist who does a thing. These new kickers aren't going to learn it in November. Oh, our blocking units are doing things a certain way, or our coverage units have figured something out. We might not be able to figure that on the fly. You don't practice special teams much during the week. Then if you go into future years, it's different because everybody can go back to the skunk works. But I know that the Commanders are a very good return team. And the Seahawks are an exceptional return team.
Yes, and that's they're both really good in those. So that'll be interesting, strength against strength. Jaden Daniels should be back.
That's the word.
But Terry McLaurin is now out.
Yes. I was just checking to see if Daniels is practicing today. There's no word yet. Nothing has come out that I've seen. He is supposed to practice today. A lot of scuttlebutt whether they should be taking their time with Daniels or not. That's moot. Their decision's their decisions. Doris Armstrong, of course, on the IR. Laremy Tunsil did not practice on Wednesday with a hamstring injury. I think he's going to play. The good news, bad news for the Seahawks coming off a bye. Cornerback Devon Witherspoon, full participant yesterday.
Good player.
Very good player. Safety Julian Love suffered a setback in his injury and was a DNP. I'm guessing he's a DNP this week.
Interesting matchup stuff. Both of these defenses are much stronger against passes in the middle of the field than to the outside.
Okay.
But it's different with the quarterbacks. Daniels is better on passes up the middle.
Yes.
While Darnold this year has been much better on passes to the outside.
He's been a lot of tosses into the flat, tosses up the sideline, and like these seamer type things. They've been very clever about getting like seamers to their tight ends and all, which I guess is an outside.
Garner, yeah.
Yeah. And that would put pressure on the Commanders' safeties and linebackers.
Yeah. Who are not great.
No.
Wagner really showing his age lately. I think this is his last season.
I think so. Get him in the Hall of Fame and whatever else he's doing with his life.
The other problem for the Commanders is the Dorrance Armstrong injury. They've dropped from something like 5th to 15th in pass rush win rate over the last couple of weeks with the Dorrance Armstrong injury, and I think that is a problem because the Washington defense was – the reason why Washington was having a mediocre defense instead of a bad defense – everybody keeps talking about how bad their defense is. It is absolutely not bad. It is 17th. But the thing that was making them 17th was having pass rush.
Yes.
And without pass rush, they're bad.
Yeah, it's a lot of, okay, Von Miller does provide a little bit here and there. Jacob Martin, guys up the middle like Deron Payne, like Jerzon Newton coming on and off. They're using Wagner as a pass rusher a lot. I guess that's probably a good use of somebody.
Also, right?
Yeah. Right, because he can use his like timing and stuff like that to get there. That's not ideal. And they're facing a team that definitely tries to neutralize the pass rush by using a lot of play action concepts, a lot of two tight end concepts.
On the other side of the ball, a strength that works in favor of the Commanders.
Okay.
Seattle is more of a zone defense than man. I mean, everybody plays a combination of the two, but they're more on the zone side. Mm-hmm. Jaden Daniels, significantly better against zone coverage this year. Small sample size, obviously, but he was better last year also against zone coverage. I went and looked at last year. So that would favor the Commanders a little bit against the Seahawks if, you know, Daniels is healthy and can do his thing. The problem is no McLaurin, right? Noah Brown either. So he's just got Deebo Samuel and then like Chris Moore.
Yeah, and the Jalen Lane and all these other guys. So it really allows you to dictate and kind of focus on Deebo and on Zach Ertz and all the things they try to do in the middle of the field there.
The line is Seahawks -3. The game is in Washington.
No weather.
Week doesn't really have any heavy weather games.
Yes.
DVOA loves the Seahawks, so I'm going to ride the Seahawks here, even though it makes me look better if the Commanders win because it makes my preseason Commander stuff look better. Whatever. At this point, we're into the season, and the Seahawks are better.
And I don't trust the Daniels health situation 100% right now. If he's back there limited in the pocket, et cetera. Like I want to see him before I think this is the Jaden Daniels we're used to. I want to see that healthy version of him.
So we'll take one more question before we go. A little Jacksonville question. Kyle Murphy wants to know, Liam Cohen ramped up Bucky Irving around this time last year. Do we think the same happens with Travis Hunter? I don't know your feeling, but my feeling is you can't predict anything with Travis Hunter because what they're trying to do with Travis Hunter is so unique that I don't think there are any past experiences. I don't think what Liam Cohen did with a young running back tells us anything about what he's going to do with Travis Hunter.
Yeah, I think that there's big differences there. And you're right, the predictive value of a unicorn like Hunter is tricky. Hunter was getting more touches and targets before their bye. He was getting
Seemed like they were transitioning out of playing him as much on defense to try to play him more on offense. I wish they would let him go downfield more, mm-hmm. which I think they were starting to do. Using him as a screens guy and gimmick guy, what a underuse of your number two overall pick. I mean, just doesn't make any sense.
Right, right. Unless you're customizing him to be a Debo, not a combination of, what did you call him a couple weeks ago, of like Parker Washington with somebody else stapled onto
it. Yeah, basically.
Yeah. But like, yeah, there's nothing predictive there based on like Bucky and Travis. I think that's apples and oranges, frankly.
Yeah. With, I don't know, Michael Carter II stapled onto him or something. Speaking of new Philadelphia Eagles,
they found somebody who's slightly better than Kelly Ringo. Congratulations.
Well, no. Michael Carter, especially a couple years ago, was very good. Listen, you know, I always talk about cornerback play is very inconsistent.
Yeah.
Michael Carter's been pretty good. The issue here is, can DeJean play as well outside as he does inside?
Right.
Because Carter is a slot.
He's a slot.
And that means Cooper DeJean's going to have to – it's Cooper DeJean who's going to replace Jackson and Ringo.
I dislike it. I would rather they be like, oh, you're both going to do slot stuff and whatever, and we're just going to figure it out on the outside. But that's not how it's going to go.
By the way, Sergio asks, how bad are we expecting J.J. McCarthy to be? Medium bad or full-on Peterman? I don't want to go judging guys based on two games.
Agreed. I mean, there's obviously some things there. We're waiting and seeing. But, yeah, I don't want to rip the kid.
All right. That does it for today's show. Everybody, enjoy tonight. And enjoy all of Sunday's games and enjoy your Halloween. And next time we speak to you, it will be November. Don't forget to like and review the show and subscribe to the Stats Hub at ftnfantasy.com for all of these splits and matchup stats and Mike's Substack, miketanier.substack.com. He's Mike Tanier. I'm Aaron Schatz. And we will see you guys Monday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern. So long, everybody.